the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. Civilization has crumbled. Pillaging marauders fight for control. And all live in fear of the Terra people. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Apocalypse Video. I'm your host, David Snyder. I'm joined again by fellow cinephiles, Cody Eastlick.
We're all gonna die!
Ryan Caldwell.
It's all right, Cody. They mostly come out at night. Mostly.
And our former human friend, now a living computer, Chad Grimes.
Structural shielding down to 57%.
Thank you, Chad. And just to give you all a peek behind the curtain here, in case you couldn't hear the onslaught currently going on outside, we are under attack by the Terra people.
God damn these Terra people!
It's okay, Cody. Ryan's right. They mostly come out at night. Mostly.
You keep saying that, but it's noon right now.
Cody, we're just trying to calm you down.
Well, it ain't working.
I'm sure the shields will hold. Everything will be fine.
Structural shielding down to 49%.
Thank you, Chad. You know, why don't we watch a movie to get our minds off the attack?
You want to watch a movie now? Who gives a shit about movies? Why the hell are we even recording a podcast at a time like this?
Because we got a job to do. Now pull yourself together, man. This isn't the first Terra attack, and it won't be the last. Now I'm asking you, what movie are we going to watch to distract us from our impending death?
What about We Bought a Zoo?
You want to watch We Bought a Zoo?
Yeah, why not?
Why not indeed, Cody? Chad, would you do the honors, please?
Structural shielding down to 38%.
Oh, Jesus!
Oh, Chad, load We Bought a Zoo, please, for the love of God.
Affirmative.
Hey, Rosie. Am I doing anything right?
You're handsomer than the other dads. Lots of them don't have hair. So that's good.
Attempt to start over.
I shall try to start over.
Sunlight. Joy.
I salute you in the great times we had together, and I quit.
We just want new. We want new everything. New opportunities, new schools, just new.
This is exactly what we've been looking for.
It's a bit complicated. What's so complicated about this place?
It's a zoo.
Yay!
Welcome to your zoo.
This is what you want. It's not what I want.
At the risk of stating the obvious, you're insane.
You good?
Yeah, all good. Thanks.
Who's that?
That's Kelly.
Okay, here's the revised plan. Dump the animals, keep Kelly. That's true joy.
Welcome to the business of live animal maintenance, Mr. Me. You're 8 inches short.
We need somebody who can take charge of this place, or else we and all these animals are gone.
That is the posture of a quitting man.
Though I don't have a lot, I do have enough.
If you stick with me, I will give this everything.
It's a lot to take on, all of us.
You read me pretty well.
I like the animals, but I love the humans.
All you need is 20 seconds of insane courage. And I promise you,
Something great will come of it.
How come you don't tell stories anymore?
Because we're living the story.
Thank you, Chad. We bought a zoo. Cameron Crowe. A Cameron Crowe joint.
You could tell.
Which, you know, I look through our archive of Cameron Crowe movies, mm-hmm. and for some reason, like, I thought that Cameron Crowe had a lot more movies to his credit, but it turns out he's only credited as a writer of 14 different projects, some of them TV shows. So I guess I was, like, remembering it wrong. I felt like I'll say this. He's been around a long time. He wrote a book in the early 80s, which was what Fast Times at Ridgemont High was based on. He went in as an undercover, like, into a high school to get stories. He was, like, you know, not a high school student. He went in to get stories, and that's how Fast Times at Ridgemont High came about. And I think he made another movie a few years after, another teen comedy movie. But I think most of us probably know Cameron Crowe from, like, Almost Famous or Jerry Maguire.
I actually didn't know Say Anything was his first movie. That's what I... seen the most.
No, was that the first one that he directed?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking more of the writer Cameron Crowe, because he's like a famous writer. He's a name. Like, you know the name Cameron Crowe. Maybe if you're a layman, you don't know what movies he's done exactly, but you're like, I recognize that name.
Yeah, I didn't know he wrote Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, and it's like, I for some reason, like, going into this, I thought that he had directed or been behind way more projects, but it actually hasn't been that many. Like, when you look at his filmography, there's year gaps, like a few 4 to 5 to 6 year gaps that, like, between his movies, and mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, I thought he was behind more stuff than he actually was, but I guess not. But maybe it's just because the movies that he has been behind are pretty big movies. You got Almost Famous was big, but I feel like that kind of grew in popularity over the years. Mm-hmm. Jerry Maguire was definitely a hit. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And then we come to We Bought a Zoo. It's like, looking at his filmography, it seems like he started in the world of teen
romps. Don't forget he wrote Vanilla Sky as well.
Well, yeah, I was getting to that.
And so, Elizabethtown.
And Elizabethtown.
So, I'm just saying, before, like, you go wherever you're about to go, just keep in mind, there's other things.
Well, no, that's what I'm getting at, for sure. It seemed like he started in, like, teen comedies.
Yeah, the damn... And then after... Stereo over Cusack's head.
Yeah, man. Say Anything. Very iconic. And then he got to a period in his life, the Jerry Maguire days, where it kind of became more about, like, dramedies, like these kind of, like, romantic-esque, like, dramedies. And then he has these weird dips, mm-hmm. like Vanilla Sky, which is really weird. And then you have a moment where he hits Almost Famous, where he kind of goes back to his roots with music and stuff like that, and he does this kind of, like, 70s almost biopic-type movie a little bit. With his time as a Rolling Stone reporter, because I think he lived that life. Mm-hmm. And then you get back to stuff like Elizabethtown, which is weird, and then you get this. So it's almost like Cameron Crowe, like, is for the most part, is kind of like a romantic dramedy type guy. It seems mm-hmm. like that's where his strengths lie. It seems.
Yeah,
and this movie certainly has that in spades. Like, I would characterize this movie as basic standard family comedy fare. You know what I mean? For the most part.
Yeah, it's kind of I don't know. But go, keep going. You're on a roll.
Well, being a standard family comedy type movie, there's a lot of those hallmarks in this movie. Like, the one thing that I find funny about romantic comedy or dramedies is that they usually don't have a huge budget, but mm-hmm. sometimes, but they have a big enough budget and big enough stars to necessitate bigger moments in the movie than maybe other. Like, movies would allow. Like, for instance, this movie opens, like, there's some moments where him, like, in a plane, and there's crazy shit happening, but it has the least convincing CGI I've seen recently.
In that shot?
When they're like, whoa!
I didn't even notice it being bad CGI.
That looked bad to me.
I didn't even notice it.
I don't know. It took me out of the movie, frankly.
What?
It did.
That's crazy. I didn't even remember seeing, like, looking outside the cockpit to notice
that's what looked bad. Like, I could tell that they were inside a thing and that there was, like, a green screen out there, and they were just like, wiggle, wiggle, like, weird. It just didn't look convincing to me.
I just didn't even notice. I was focusing on the acting, the actors telling
the
me the story.
That was kind of
I feel like everybody. I mean, this was the screenplay is written by Cameron Crowe based on a book. I feel like everybody. It's like everyone sucks I feel like, in the movie.
What? All right, you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, everyone sucks.
I don't know. Like, everything, no one seems convincing or, like, real people in a weird way. I don't know. Like,
really?
Well, I
actually think I disagree.
I get the sense, because, again, getting into, like, standard family comedy hallmarks, like, it does seem like a lot of people are, like, kind of happy joy. Like, there's not a, with the exception of the son, Dylan, who's, like, the standard emo kid.
Which yeah.
And then you cool. have.
He has, like, he's and like then
it's funny that you think he's cool, because he kind of sucks.
Well, and then you, well, it's like, well, let's kind of go through these standard comedy family comedy tropes. So you have, like, the single dad, who's had a tragedy in his life. Like, his wife has died. He's trying to get along.
Real quick, how wild was it when the other school moms were like just
the cougars just coming
just
out
throwing themselves at him
throwing
that was fucking
at him.
Yeah, crazy, right?
It's weird. There are moments in this movie and in the trivia I can see why where they go a little bit outside of the family rules, like family friendly rules, where mm-hmm. they kind of introduce these elements like the horny brother. It's like that I feel like the horny brother is a character from maybe a PG-13 movie. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Like, the things he said, it's like, you should hike her. You know what I mean? But it's toned down a little bit for this movie. But those they have these weird fringe elements that come into this PG movie.
Well, in that way, I feel like it's kind of... You're talking about Cameron Crowe being a comedy-drama kind of guy. I think what you're describing is that's just real life. Real life is only one of two things for the most part. Comedy or drama or somewhere, you know, in that spectrum. It turns out our lives have a lot going on with the, you know, sci-fi and fantasy.
We got a lot of sci-fi shit in our life, yeah.
But for most folks, that kind of spectrum isn't just, it's not family fair, it's life fair. So a horny
or
uncle.
I think you mean Lifetime Channel fair.
No, I don't mean that either, because Lifetime is more sappy, you goon.
Well, this movie is sappy, though.
Yeah, but it's not like, Lifetime Original is targeted to a very specific audience, and it is not families, it's middle-aged at-home women.
Okay,
like, that
so
is
this movie's
Lifetime.
More ABC Family-esque.
No, it's not, because ABC Family is specifically crafting family fair. I'm saying this movie is not family fair. It's just trying to be a close, true to life, uplifting thing. But yeah, families are going to watch it because it's about a family.
This is a movie your mom would like.
Every mom, every person's mom.
That,
well, would
you
like
know
this.
What I mean. Like that's the mom. Yeah. Would like.
Well, it's that's that thing because a mom is specifically targeting moms is Lifetime. I'm saying people can like this movie. Of any part of the family, and these characters who you're describing as being fringe elements, no, like, those are true to life. Like, a person, an uncle, or if you're, you know, the patriarch of the family, your brother being a horny kind of, like, fuck-up, that's true to life. Everyone has a person in their family, you know, maybe not immediate, but their extended family, who's close, who gets by, but they're kind of, you know, screwing around. That's just a thing. I think that's what I'm saying is, like, these things that you're saying are fringe elements from, like, a different genre. Aren't a different genre. Because
well, no,
the genre you're describing
genre,
is incorrect.
Rating of this genre.
Eh, maybe. But like I'm saying I don't think this is... I think that's not quite the same genre, quote-unquote. But I see what you're saying. Continue.
Yeah, I didn't mean a different genre. I just meant, like, a more, like, intense version of this movie. But anyway... But yeah, like to kind of touch upon more of what you were talking about, Ryan, where like a lot of the people suck. Like,
well,
are you? Do
no,
you? Do,
not,
what do you mean?
It,
can you expand on that?
Like, suck. I just felt like everybody, like, all right. So he shows up at Matt Damon buys the zoo, and he's
the
like first being introduced to like the zookeeper Scarlett Johansson and her crew, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like you have all these characters in there, and like nobody was like used. Like it felt like
yeah, okay.
Like I don't know. It just seemed like there was there was points where I feel like just missed opportunities, like of like kind of comedy or
like
just,
you have.
Like,
what? Like, you have the almost famous kid, and he's just there with a monkey on his shoulder in every
That's
scene.
That's who that fucking kid is. I yeah. couldn't figure out for
and
the life of
me anything.
Who he was.
He's just there.
None yeah. of them do anything. Why have you cast all these people if they're just background actors?
Well,
really?
The only
time is that guy that gets mad at the inspector
yeah.
and is in
fucking Robert the Bruce from Braveheart is here.
As MacReady.
As MacReady, an excellent name for a gruff character like this. Standard name, MacReady. And he's there for comic relief. He's there like, help me back, I'm going to kill the inspector. I hate him.
He hates Walt Ferris.
That's the only thing you get, though, you know? I don't know. It just seemed there's missed opportunity. I feel like it could have been, like, a nice, like, kind of funny, like, I could enjoy a movie like this, but I just felt like there wasn't enough till it was just like kind of the bare bone minimum. This is the best way to put it, I think. I don't know.
I mean, I agree. They could have fleshed out those other characters a bit because we don't get that much with them. It's very surface level stuff. Like Scarlett Johansson's character is the new keeper of the zoo, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's really all we know. We know that she's kind of like, you know, she's a little pissed off that she has to spend she's busy a lot. She has to spend a lot of time there. And she doesn't get to spend time with her friends.
Yeah, she's younger and she's choosing to put a zoo ahead of her life. Yeah.
And that's all we get with her character. There's not a ton there. Like I said, Almost Famous kid with the monkey on his shoulder. That's literally that's all thing. He has a monkey on his shoulder. That's all we get with him. MacReady is MacReady. And then even more perplexing is Ellie Fanning's character, which I guess lives at the zoo, and we don't know where her family is.
She lives on the zoo. She's homeschooled, and she works at the restaurant. But I don't know who's homeschooling her or anything.
And she just she just wants to bang the son like right off the bat. Like,
well, I mean, hey, the son is a city boy. I mean, this is a kid coming from a world where there's a Target on every corner. I mean, if I want to, if I'm Ellie Fanning, and I want to go to Target, I got to go 9 miles out of town through those backcountry roads.
It's so wild that's the thing.
It just seemed like there wasn't. It just seemed like there wasn't much life to everything. And even though there was, I don't know. It was strange.
Well, the only people with any sort of depth is Matt Damon and his son. Like the daughter is just kind of the titular like family movie daughter, where she's like she always cute says kid. The most adorable cute kid.
Yeah, she's cute
she says
kid.
The most adorable thing at just the right moment. There are times when it seems like she weirdly knows exactly the right thing to say to like cheer up her dad or her
brother.
Because
kids are wise beyond their years, David.
Exactly,
everyone
it's that
knows
trope.
That. Yeah.
So the only two characters with depth are Damon and his son Dylan.
And Dylan. Sorry, bud. His acting is not good because he doesn't really do much except for a single scene in which him and Matt Damon are yelling at each other. And that relationship, I think, is the realest shit in this movie. Yeah. It's the idea of this dad who he's treating his son like he thinks of himself. He's like, no, you're not a kid anymore. You're a grown ass adult. Like, life's hard. Buck up and do it. And I like that the whole, you know, the conflict there is that the kid's like, nah, man, I want to be a kid, too. It's not like. Let me be more. Let me be more on my own. Blah blah blah. It's the opposite. He's like, no. Like, don't make me be an adult now. Fuck this. You know, it sucks.
Well, this spawns the best line in the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. The best line in this movie.
Don't give up on our adventure.
Oh no, that's not the best line. Line is still in that part, but it's where Matt Damon's telling him he's like, I brought you this dream. I gave you this dream with cool animals and shit.
Yeah, with cool animals, man.
Yeah, it's great.
Just come on. There's cool animals. What more do you want? Exactly. That kind of gets into a thing, so we find out later, we find out pretty early on in the movie that his wife died and blah blah blah, and he used to be this big journalist, and now he just wants to the reason that he buys a zoo is that he wants to reconnect with his kids. Is that the one thing?
It seems like he wants to, he buys a zoo because he wants a restart, and everything else reminds him of
His wife.
His wife.
That's right. Okay, and so he wanted to get as far away.
Yes, and he's like, all right, here's a zoo. Right. It's totally different. It's totally new. And also, we see early on that his character likes to fix things. So he's like, oh, I'm going to be able to fix something, dick around. You know, his daughter sees it, and he's like, oh, how was I ever not going to buy this place? Like,
and
sure, let's do
it. Into the thing, like, come on, they're cool animals.
Exactly.
We forgot.
Love me!
J.B. Smooth was the damn realtor.
Who's J.B. Smooth? Because that guy, his character was unfortunately terrible.
Yeah. Well, he's a big part in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Gotcha.
He ends up living with Larry David's character.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, he's one of the funniest people I've seen. But yeah, he's unfortunately like just not. Like, they didn't give him anything to say, I feel like. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that character, it doesn't matter who's that character. That character sucked. Like, they needed better lines. He's just like...
Well, because he doesn't really do anything funny. He's just like, he has an awkward moment where the daughter's like tells him, our mommy's dead or whatever.
Yeah, he was like trying to make it funny, you know?
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's too bad, because he's like, I haven't really seen him in a movie, and I was just like, oh, there he is, JB.
I mean, but that should have been your standard no-name actor
getting that ass, Larry. Getting that ass.
Yeah, exactly. That's what JB Smooth is best at, being funny, and he's not allowed to be funny in this movie, because he's given a character that is not funny.
Well, I think he's funny for... like kid characters to be funny, because he's a guy who talks fast, talks uplifting, and tries to be like nice. And then he has the joke where it's like, oh, how long you've been doing this? He's like, it's my first day, and he's like,
that's the one kind of funny moment.
Like, but that's the thing is, it is It is a basic.
He's the one that gets to say it's a zoo, though. He's the he has the line.
Yeah, yeah, he does. Yeah, it's a zoo. He does. So that's the thing is, I think maybe he's checking the boxes for like comedy, but not necessarily excelling past it.
Yeah,
like it's a very base level of like people. Yeah. Someone will, a couple people will chuckle at this. You know,
he gets the and trailer line. You know, he gets the
yeah, man. But you think he gives a shit what we think, man? He's catching those chicks. No.
Well, let's get back to one thing I want to talk about, Ellie Fanning's character. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going on there? So we don't like
have a crush on a city boy. He's an exotic
origin. I'm just like, let's dive into this rabbit hole of Ellie Fanning's character's
origin.
This is
weird that you want to do this, but okay. Well, no,
because it's perplexing. She's just there and she lives there.
She's fucking Scarlett Johansson's, she's Kelly's cousin.
Did I say that?
Yes.
Then yeah. Why the hell doesn't she go home with Scarlett Johansson or something?
Because she says she lives here. So presumably
her mom lives there too.
No, Scarlett Johansson lives with her mom. She says that's this.
True. Yeah.
That's right. But presumably Ellie Fanning lives with her mom on the thing, but we never see her mom because her mom's not important to the story.
Do they say her mom's there?
She says she lives on the farm and she's homeschooled, so she has to live with someone who's in charge.
But do they say the mom?
No, they don't say who she lives with that I know. Exactly. I can't remember.
Like, is it one of the faceless, random people at the bar?
It's unimportant.
It is to me.
It's fucked up that it's because
she's such a big character that falls in love with Dylan instantly. I mean, that's like basically one of the main subplots of this movie is their relationship. Mm-hmm. For her to just be there, it's kind of weird.
People just live places all the time, David.
I mean,
maybe she's an emancipated minor. She's just making her way.
I feel like it's the same. It's like the same kind of thing with. What's her name? The character in The Wizard, played by Jenny
Lewis,
who's just like, she has a dad, but she's like homeless kinda, and she just like, I guess her dad's a trucker in that movie, and she just sort of like hitchhikes around. It's really weird and unspecific. I get the same vibe here. It's just like, okay, I guess she just lives there.
Maybe.
But we never find out if she even has parents. Was she an orphan? What's going
on? Dylan would have been a lot better if it was played by Fred Savage.
You could say that about a lot of things. We could have said that about the main Gelfling in Dark Crystal. If that was Fred Savage, it would have been better. Then that movie would have been recommendable.
Yeah. That's funny.
Cody wouldn't have had such just vitriol against that movie if it was Fred Savage. There. See, there's a glint of light in Cody's eyes now.
The show is who could have Fred Savage played?
No, because who fucking cares about Fred Savage?
Hey, your eyes lit up, man. No, I saw it.
I don't even.
You're like Fred Savage? Dark Crystal could have been good.
Now I gotta try and remember everything Fred Savage has been in and see if I actually care about any of them.
Hey, Little Monsters, man.
God, that movie sucked.
They give a kid. They make a kid drink pee.
Yeah. Oh, great. What a hero.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, she was a little strange. Like, everyone's a little... Everyone comes off a little bit strange in this movie. Yeah. It's almost like Matt Damon is confused that he's in this movie. Like, but, like, not in a bad way. It's, like, almost, like, part of his character. And then, like, he's, like, getting, like... Scarlett Johansson's, like, naming off all the damn things that she needs... to do, and then she like kind of goes off on him at one point about like, why'd you buy this zoo, blah blah blah, blah. And but she's like mad at a time, and he's just like, why not, and then like walks away smiling almost like he's a mythical character or something.
Yeah,
it's,
like, yes, yeah, yeah, it's the same thought.
It's because he's unflappable, man, and it's because he is living a fantasy at that time. He has yet to... The whole point that, you know, they get to in this movie is he needs to grapple with and let go of the fact that his wife passed. And so the reason he's behaving as if he's like fucking, you know, old man, wise man, Sasquatch walking off into the woods is because he is just completely like, no, I'm just doing it. I'm just living this fucking fantasy life because everything's peaches, nothing's wrong, and I'm the best me possible. So I'm doing these things, you know? That's why he is such a fucking elusive beast for the first chunk of this movie is because, you know, he is living a fantasy.
Oh, that's going to cost $150 million? No problem. Or $150,000? No problem.
Yeah.
I got inheritance.
I'll write these checks.
Yeah. Well, there's a point where she just turns and just like is like mad at him in the very beginning, and it just seemed weird. It just, I don't know. They're just
Well, she was mad because like she's worked on the zoo for a while and she doesn't want it to go to ruin. And then this guy comes in who's clearly just like
over his head. Yeah.
I'll buy a zoo, whatever. Yep. She's like, this guy ain't serious. Like these animals are going to die or what happened there? What's going to happen to me? The zoo's going to close. All these people that work here are going to be out of a job.
Exactly. That's yeah, so she turns pissed. On him because she's just like, who's this new boss? He doesn't know dick.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same way anybody behaves when they get a new boss who sucks.
True. Yeah, everyone gets crazy. yeah, I don't know. It just seemed, something seemed off. I think that's what it is. Everybody seems off their game.
It does sort of seem like a heightened world a little bit. Like the way, there was something that wasn't quite super realistic about the movie. You know what I mean? There's like, Like Cody said, I think he nailed it, where like he just like mythically walks off after he says, why not? And just walks it like I could almost see him like disappearing into a beam of light at that moment. Like, it's like,
yeah, he just walks around the corner and turns into a beam of mist.
Yeah, it's just it's so weird. It's like, yeah, kind of there's something weird with tone that I haven't really quite put my finger on with the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because the tone itself, like, I agree. I think there's a weird tone to this movie, and it's because the tone matches the dads. And the dads is living a fantasy until it becomes serious at the end with Spar being a whole stand-in for his wife and then coming to grips with these things. Then the tone shifts to represent it, and then it becomes upbeat again because the guy has gone through that valley of adjusting. But the thing is, the tone is with the dad. The audience, we're here, we're kind of more with the workers because we are also just like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's strange, but.
Well, I mean, despite all of that, like this movie did pull on my heartstrings, I'll admit. Like despite a weird sort of heightened, weird reality, I enjoyed it. Even though there's a lot of stuff that's on the nose, like pretty much every song that they use is so incredibly,
which is why
on
it's Cameron Crowe. That's why you're like, oh yeah, he's the guy who did this.
Yeah, like although, when the rain starts.
Although, so you know what, we're talking about songs. Let's talk about it. Ryan, how wild is the dude who did the soundtrack to this fucking movie?
So yeah, fucking, if you don't know, Jonesy is is it Iceland?
Sigur Rós. Yeah, they're from Iceland.
Yeah, there is. They're Sigur Rós. They did a lot of the music in Life Aquatic. Like a couple of songs are in there. But he's like, it's really like Icelandic, weird, kind of orchestral, electronic, like epic music. And then I saw that, like, music by Jonesy, original music.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? How did they get this guy off the island to come and make this thing?
Yeah, man. That's why I was like, this is, when I saw that, I thought similar, when I was just like, all right, this movie's going to be, this is like, there's something here.
Interesting.
There's got to be something here that gives that guy pause and goes like, yeah, I'll work on this movie.
Yeah,
his music is so like kind of, I would say, soundtracky, like type of thing. Like you would hear.
I thought it sounded like trailer music.
Well, yeah, like kind. Their music kind of is like that, but they're not. Their music isn't all over the place because I don't think they like sell their music all the time like that.
Well, and also their music isn't all over the place. Also, their music is made up. Like the vocals and their songs are all gobbledygook. They don't mean anything. It just sounds good. It's very strange.
It's like sounds like other languages and stuff, but it's not. So
yeah, so it's a weird thing that guy.
They're basically
got
talking Skeksy.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, they're just singing Skeksy. So you're talking about the music, Dave. You mentioned that. Oh, the music. Yeah, the music cues are all on the nose.
Very on the nose.
But that, and you know what though? That's the thing too. And I was actually kind of surprised, and I enjoyed the fact that. So I thought it was going to be a movie about the dad and the kids, or like the family coming together and like, you know, enjoying new mom Scarlett Johansson or whatever. But it wasn't that at all. The daughter was cool. She'd already accepted and kind of tried to start moving past it because she's young. But it was just about the dad, and then second plot, the dad and the son. Like it was just about the grown man needing to accept it. And so in that way, I was like, oh, this movie's not for kids. Because they're not the ones who are learning this lesson. It's for like adults, or it's a story for a family to take their family to this movie, and kids will enjoy the base level stuff.
Well, it's
and then when it gets to the meat of it, when it gets to this
like
the heart stuff, the bear stuff, like that's for the kids, that's for everybody. But when it comes to the actual moral, if you want to call it a moral of the story, it's for the parents. It's for grown ass people to like learn to let go.
Which is interesting you bring that up, because I mentioned earlier I felt like there were some moments in the movie that felt like should have been in a PG-13 version of this movie. Turns out they were. that they had to cut language and sexual content to make this movie PG.
Mm.
Which is interesting.
Well, I'm not surprised. Because
it's interesting because, like, I think that what's there is, like, there's never a point in this movie where I was just like, well, this should have been a PG or that was too much. Like, I just assumed this movie was PG-13, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out it was PG. I didn't know.
Mm.
And it's kind of interesting. I'm like getting to what you're saying, Cody, like this is, turns out to be just a movie more for adults and kids.
Yeah.
Why not just make this PG-13?
Well, it's a movie for everyone. And the idea being that, but yeah, I agree. It's a movie for parents of families.
But it's not like a PG-13. If this were a PG-13 movie, it's like, well, I can't take my kids to it.
Yeah.
Some people would, though, because that's just the fucking world
we used to live in. Yeah, I guess.
Well, luckily, the pterodons don't care about ratings. Yeah. They'll take their kids to anything, specifically to genocide.
You got a real extra grind with these pterodons.
You've not met the terror people, dog. They're out there flying around, picking up villagers and dropping them on their heads like fucking eggs, cracking them. It's the shit I see out our front window. I'm just saying, we need to wipe them out. We're not going to get much traffic here if we don't wipe out the Terra people.
That's a good point. Because it's a long trek from...
They think my head's a fucking egg.
And we can't get a hat big enough.
Maybe we can do something about this, because it's a long trek from Bullet Farm and Gastown to here.
Yeah.
So.
And no one wants to fucking drive that shit or hike it, because Terra people just swooping on them. All right, the next person who comes in here, we're going to see what they can do to help us in this.
It's a good idea.
All right, back to the movie.
Well, I mentioned the best line in the movie was don't give up on our venture. That might not be the case.
Yeah, the actual best line is animals with cool animals. Cool That's animals. The one.
Well, the main line in the movie, the one they kind of sell you on early on without you even realizing it is, why not?
Oh, well, yeah.
And you find out, and this is one thing I love about this movie. They don't pay that off until the very end, and you don't even realize it's a thing to be paid off.
Until
literally the last second of the movie.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And as I said earlier, this movie does do a good job of pulling at least my heartstrings. Like you and I, Cody, we got teary-eyed.
Hey, well, I did. First of all, don't speak
for
me.
You got emotional.
Second of all, of course I did. I just remember what it was like in the old world when they had things like Targets to drive to for butter.
Target.
but no,
you remember the smell of walking into a Target and always smelling like a popcorn smell,
or breadsticks from the Pizza Hut, the little mini Pizza Hut they had in there.
Icy.
I used to work at a Target. That was the shit.
Mm.
God bless. There's a couple things that really that stuck out to me or that I liked. I liked dealing with Spar. I like that it's like Spar. I felt like this was another thing where it's like, no, this movie is realistic in its way for like everybody, which is that, no, at a certain point, you are doing them more harm than good, prolonging the life of these animals. Like, that's not a message you see in a kid's movie, usually. Usually,
you gotta put the tiger down.
Yeah, the choice is, no, we have to euthanize the tiger. Yeah. Like, that is the answer to, that is the, you know, the solution. And he's fighting back against it as an adult. Usually that would be a kid doing that, right? And the adult comes in and says, no, this is what we have to do. He's the adult.
But the tiger is the metaphor for my dead wife!
Exactly. And so that happens, you know, and he comes through it and he has the argument with his son. And also there's the moment where he's sitting next to Spar or looking at Spar and Dylan comes in and they both say something that they want the other one to say. Mm. And it is fucking touching shit, which is Dylan says, what does Dylan say? I'm sorry I dragged you in on this. Like I'm doing the best I can or something like that. And Matt Damon says, you're doing a great job, dad, or something like, it was like something very specific, but I was just like, oh, fuck off. He looks through his son's stuff. Dylan's does all these fucked up drawings. And then he sees just a simple drawing of Spar. And he says, yeah, did you see the new signs? We're going to use this. And Dylan's like, what? Like so excited. And Matt Damon says, I'm your fan, man. When he says, I'm your fan, man, I almost cried. I was just like, I want Matt Damon to tell me he's my fan every day of my life.
He says that earlier that he's just like, he does these crazy dark drawings, but they're really good.
Yeah. But that's the thing, right? Is he says that to other characters. He never says anything good to Dylan because the only time Dylan needs attention is when he's fucking up, you know? So it's like,
he's been expelled like 3 times.
Yeah. And he's stealing. And I like that. I like that. He's like, I don't care about all this other shit you did. You stole. Like that is fucking the antithesis of what the character I instill in you as a person. So that was just like, You know, there's moments like that throughout this movie where you're like, all right, this movie has a heart to it, and mm-hmm. it has a heart to it, even if it's overt in some of its things.
It's on its shoulder, basically.
It has a heart to it and knows exactly like how to express it, in really like poignant ways. Like saying "I'm your fan man" is not fucking as on the nose as some of the other things in this movie, but it's like, oof, that'll get you. Mm-hmm.
But the why not?
The fact that that's kind of also why I was like, this movie is for parents grieving the loss of this movie's only for them because it's all about how it's like, no, you're allowed to move on past a person, but still celebrate them. And here's how, and it's him showing, you know, his kids.
Here's how we met.
Yeah. Retracing his steps. And like, it's the movie version of How I Met Your Mother, but it ends much better. Apparently I never watched the end of that show, but like, that's the thing, right? Is it's addressing this fact of like, here's who I am. Here's who you guys are. And here's how it started with her. It isn't just like, yeah, we always loved your mom. Like in movies, I feel like too often the family thing is like one of the parents dies and they're like, they were always so great and they're just held up as heroes or whatever. But this one, we actually get to see him like, no, I'm going to show you exactly how it started. And I was being a fucking goofball. I was walking around out this way. And then I come around and I ask, you know, why?
In the window, in the restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, why would a woman as beautiful as you talk to me or whatever? And then she fucking.
After a pause.
Yeah. You get that why not. You're just like, damn.
And the movie ends. You're like, oh.
Yeah. It really brings it together.
It's like the epitome of that gif of Antonio Banderas when he leans back in his seat after looking at his computer and just kind of, you know, oh, yeah.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
I think it's from Assassins, maybe?
He's we'll in that movie. I mean, and we didn't even mention, you know, the whole plot of the zoo is it's run down and they need to open it. And like, so they're going against Walt Ferris, the dude from Best in Show. And
another hallmark of these types of movies, there's this douchey corporate guy or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, man, the man sucks. And, you know, they're trying to get the zoo ready.
Fucking little, like, tape measure thing.
Yeah, his clipboard and tape measure. It's automatic. Literally, it's a tape measure dick contest. Like, he's mm-hmm. just looking at him, like, laying back, just measuring his dick. And, you know, it all works out. They have to put Spar down, and it's terrible, but they get their act together.
A lion almost escapes.
And the lion almost escapes.
Faulty gate lock.
Yep, and then MacReady comes and saves Kelly. He fixes that lock because, god damn it, he's a smith. Like, he knows these those enclosures inside and out. Also, they don't say cages, they say enclosures. I feel like maybe what it is that tonal thing we talk about is that even though the movie tells us on Front Street that it's like the mother just passed and it's kind of about that, it takes you away from that for a while and makes mm-hmm. you think it's just about the zoo mm-hmm. before getting back to the idea that it's like, no, it's not about that. It's about these parents.
About moving on.
Yeah. And then it's like, from that point on, once it starts that trajectory is when the movie like just finishes really strong, in my opinion. And where you're just like, yeah, like the movie's not, it's not the best movie that ever existed. It's not the best movie of this kind, but you're just like, yeah, all right, that's good.
Yeah.
That feels good.
You leave feeling good, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another moment I liked is when Matt Damon is all like, all you need is 20 seconds of foolish bravery or whatever it is.
Yeah, totally insane bravery or courage. Yeah.
Do you want to hear about the real zoo? Chad just sent me a printed out a little thing for me about it.
You mean the Dartmoor Zoological Park?
Yeah, I guess that's what
it really I know is. All about it.
Yeah, it was actually, was it in England? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah, it's in England, which is interesting to me.
Yeah. It says the fictional zoo in the film is called Rosemore Wildlife Park. It's located in California. Okay. It says in real life, Benjamin's wife, Catherine, died after they had already bought the zoo and moved in.
Bullshit, yeah, a couple months after.
Fucking fake movie.
Rude.
In the film, Benjamin bought the zoo after her death. In real life, Benjamin's father had died and his mother needed to move. Benjamin's father had died. Okay, interesting. The farm cost the same price as the parents' house. Blah, 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 who cares? It said instead of an escaped bear, it was actually a jaguar that escaped.
Oh!
What was that?
This is fake. This movie's bullshit.
Oh, Jesus.
It also says that his children were a lot younger, 4 and 6, and then the children were
They needed to hit that emo kid trope.
Yeah, you gotta have an emo teenager.
Yep, for sure.
It also says that in real life, it took 2 years to buy the zoo. And not like
that makes more sense. Or whatever it is. Yeah, no, I'll cut you a check, and then boom, they're there. It says that again, it gets into that heightened fantasy reality that Cody was talking about. We're just living Matt Damon's fantasy, man.
It kind of has a dreamlike vibe, but I guess maybe that's intentional, I suppose. And I don't know. Kind of heaven-esque, but that zoo.
Well, it certainly got our minds off the Terra people attacking, I'll tell you that.
Terra people?
Never mind, I misspoke. So, Cody, why did you end up picking We Bought a Zoo for us to watch today?
Well, back in the old world, I was seeing this lady, and she seemed to think that this was the best movie ever. She absolutely loved it. And I told her we would watch it sometime. Then the apocalypse happened, and I ended up here in the waste with you guys. I don't know, it's just on my mind.
Oh, wow, it's like a tribute.
Yeah.
So in a way, was this your way of letting go of your past life, like Matt Damon in the movie?
No. Or at least a way not to die today.
I mean, I'm pretty content with just living out vicariously through the movies we watch, because this is a hellscape. And you guys, I mean, we all sleep in, like Ellie Fanning's character, we sleep on site because we can't leave with the Pteranodons.
Oh, absolutely
around.
Not. The Terra people are terrible.
I mean, there are often times when I have a gun in my mouth and you guys don't know it because this is a hellscape, but, you know.
First of all.
That's true. Chad does turn the power off to energy saver mode, so it could be anything in my mouth. But but it's movies like this.
I was gonna say, we don't have any guns here, Dave. We need to get some.
It's movies like this that keep me away from the brink, and I'm glad that you picked this movie, Cody, for whatever reason.
Me too.
It was a nice change of pace from Wolf Cops and Logan's Runs and God, Dark Crystals.
Yeah, just movies about just death and like the impossibleness of plot. Yeah, this is much better.
Wow. Like, this movie has something to say about moving on. It's not weirdly unspecific like it was in Dark Crystal or Logan's Run, maybe.
I feel like the message was clear. I mean, listen, we discussed Dark Crystal. It's fine. And its message was clear eventually, I guess.
Well, let's, unless you guys have anything else to say on We Bought a Zoo, do you guys want to get into recommendations?
Let's do it.
Sure.
I would definitely recommend this. I mean, like you said, Cody, it's not the best of its genre, of its kind, but it's heartfelt, and despite the fact that some of the characters are really just cardboard cutouts, they're very base-level things, I enjoyed this movie, and it really, like, it went up and up and up in the heartstring pulling until the very end when it just, that's when it yanked on it, and I was just like, that's when tears came, and I'm like, this movie's a little, it's kind of beautiful.
Ryan?
I don't know. I'm going to say no, not a recommendation.
All right, so what would you recommend instead of a similar movie?
This movie kind of reminded me of, like, Secondhand Lions for some reason. I don't know. Because
like, there's a lion in it?
There's a lion in it.
For some reason, before you even said Secondhand Lions, I thought the movie you were about to say was Stepmom, and I was like, okay, maybe.
Stepmom. I'll recommend Stepmom.
What? Oh, dealing with letting go, is that the same theme? Is that what you're getting at?
Oh, fuck.
I don't know. Just like, I'm just trying to think of like kind of family-esque things like that. But that reminds, for some reason, Secondhand Lions came to mind. And I remember that's like a PG movie. But Stepmom was pretty good.
Instead, your thought was more, what's another movie with a lion in it that's PG?
Lion King.
Yeah. What about like E.T.? There you go. What about like something like that?
Hey, whatever it's your
that's Ryan, like that's like a family movie that's good, right?
Ryan, you're the one who's not recommending it, so you do what you want. As for me, you ask, you know, why watch We Bought a Zoo? Why not? Recommend that. I recommend that.
Why not indeed, Cody? And if anyone out there in the wasteland listening, if you're curious about We Bought a Zoo, why not? Just come out here to Sector 2 and rent it. It's not too bad. Check it out. It'll lift your spirits.
Yeah.
It'll tell you how to forgive the you know, the quicksand pits of hell that sucked up your last wife and three children. Or how to forgive the barons of Bullet Town who shot up your entire family.
It'd also be good. It'll teach you to put down your mutie kid who has like nine legs and, you know, is on his last leg, I guess. Sorry. That was very insensitive of me. I'm sorry about that. Now, we just lost all of our muty, multiple-legged
All the centipede listeners.
Yeah. Fuck.
How dare you enrage the centipede people?
We're only four episodes in. I'm already losing the fucking customers and the listeners.
Yeah.
They're a big population.
All right. Next time. All right. Here's the thing, guys. We need to bring in the centipede people. So yes. What do we watch that brings in the centipede people?
The centipede people. Stepmom?
Nope. Not okay. A good one. Try again.
I like steps and lots of legs. That's kind of funny.
Centipede. Centipede.
What about
the human centipede?
That's a little on the nose, like this movie does with the songs. But I like where you're thinking. but then again, I've never seen it. That might be.
It was clearly the superior joke because they're called centipede, human centipedes. Fuck y'all. It's a movie about them, and they'll hate us more. That was a good joke. You ruined it. I'm done. I'm just going to let the pterodons take me. Fuck y'all.
Cody, don't go.
Cody, no. Why not? Why not?
So your question is?
Why did you buy this place?
Why not?
Coming?